If you're looking at the things that anger you while you're with someone in active addiction, it's typically justified. You know, marriage is supposed to be interdependent. We're meant to have partners who are there for us emotionally, and when it's not happening, the situations will make someone angry.
Examples such as?
Like, whenever your partner isn't there for you to, like, help around the house. Somebody who isn't, who's sleeping on the couch all the time when you need to go to family functions. Somebody who just isn't showing up in your marriage.
Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Till the Wheels Fall Off. I'm Matt.
I'm Paige.
And today we're talking anger and maybe a little bit of resentment.
Ooh.
Man, this comes up a lot. I think we've got a pretty great episode in store for you today. But first, let's talk about some things that are going on. We've got our first Wheelie workshop coming this summer, June 8th, in the Dallas area, specifically McKinney, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Details are on our website, www.tufo.com. If you ever wonder what it would be like to have a full day with us, to ask questions, to be walked through certain situations, maybe things that you've heard, concepts you need elaboration on, now is your chance.
Yes.
You can check that out at www.tufo.com. We have limited spots available. We would love to see you out there.
Yes.
We're thinking about pairing this along with a meetup, which is not completely confirmed yet.
Yeah.
Or can we just go ahead and confirm that?
Sure.
We're going to have a meetup along with it, probably the next day.
The next day.
So if you're from out of town, you want to make a weekend of it, we would love to meet you guys. We'd love to see you. We'd love to work through some of these things. We think there's a ton of value in this and getting a full day. I mean, it's from 9 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we'll feed you lunch too.
Yes.
And some snacks.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah, we have the agenda listed on the website so that you can see what we're going to discuss and then just have some free time too so we can talk.
Yeah. So if you're local, you got to be there. If you're out of town, you at least got to consider it.
Yep.
We'd love to see you guys.
I'm excited.
It's going to be warm.
I really want to meet some people in person. It'd be so exciting.
Oh, that'd be so cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We talked about this. We're going to have name tags. And I think what we're going to do for the name tags is probably put people's Facebook profile photo on them.
If they have a Facebook, not all of our listeners have a Facebook.
But for those that do,
from
for
the
sure.
community.
I'm really bad at doing this because we've done something like digital before, like meeting people from the internet. And without a profile picture, I'm like, hang on. But if I have one in mind, I know exactly who that person
like,
is.
I know
and
who you
everything
are. I know
they've
your name.
Said. Yeah, and everything they've ever said too. I know, like I can reference it way easier.
That's crazy.
So we're going to have some fun with it. I think it's going to be super informative. It's going to be helpful. It's going to make things a lot more clear for your situation.
Yes.
A day of us speaking, walking you through some elements of the course, our own experience, taking questions.
And then y'all connecting with other people as well. That's one of the biggest things I think you can take away
from it.
That's
a big part of it. Mm-hmm. What it's like to be around other people that are going through this. I cannot tell you how healing that is and how amazing it is just to feel like you're not alone and be able to put faces with it and hear real life experiences. We are not going surface level, y'all.
Oh, no.
We're going deep. We're going beneath the surface, submarine depths to where you've probably never gone to uncover a lot of things and just bring clarity to all this.
Yes. It'll be a very comfortable atmosphere, though. You know, we'll make you feel at home.
Yes. Yeah. If you know us well enough by now, I hope that's a given.
Yeah.
We're not going to put anyone in a situation where they're uncomfortable, but we will push you to probably places you haven't gone, especially sharing this stuff openly. And it's not, think sort of like a process group, quote unquote process group. I mean, we are not licensed, so I don't even like to use the word process. But
I still don't understand that.
Well, we can't
process
use that word.
Process means process. It's just going through something.
All I know is that someone smarter than me told me no. So
okay.
Quote unquote, air quotes on the process. But processing all kinds of stuff. And I've done this over the course of 11 years sober. And I continue to do it. And there's a reason I continue to do it. It's because it's incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to be boxed in with crosstalk rules or traditions like 12-step groups have or anything like that. It's just for you. This is our program, our way of doing it, our rules, which means there aren't a lot of them. And can't wait. Cannot wait to see you guys out there. So check it out.
Woo-woo.
Got some new merch in the works. Thank you to everyone who gave us input on stickers and merch, by the way. That was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the sticker ideas were greatness. Shirt ideas. I'm in the background.
Burgess shit.
Yeah. That one was... That's got to happen. For those of you that don't know, one of the first pieces of advice that I ever heard in sobriety that really resonated with me was a guy that said, the bird didn't shit on your windshield. The bird just shit. Referring to why do bad things always happen to me? Why is the world picking on me? Why is so-and-so picking on me? Help me reframe a lot of things. And I think it's so true.
Yep.
man, it's easy to feel like the world's just picking on you. And this pairs nicely into anger.
Uh-huh.
As we're talking about anger.
Yeah.
So this is a Paige episode.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Paige is not doing well, y'all.
Nope.
She's not doing well.
I did not have a good day yesterday.
No, she didn't. Everything was fine. Uh-huh. We on Saturday, cooked dinner, all is well. I woke up Sunday morning, I don't know, like 6 or 7?
I don't know. All I know is I've been sick.
You came in the...
You don't have to give details. What are you doing? Where are you going with this?
You came out of the bathroom and you were just like, I feel like crap. Absolute crap. So when... This is just my take on this. As an adult, getting sick is a lot worse than when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But nothing is worse than a stomach bug.
Agreed.
Nothing.
The cramps.
Queasiness and stuff.
Oh my God.
Dude, trade me 105 degree fever and COVID or whatever else, flu, any day over a stomach bug.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I don't take medicine. I try to get through things as quick as possible on my own. And I was in a lot of pain. And I was like, should I take Tylenol? No, I don't want to mess up my stomach. I'm just going to deal with it.
Regretted that, didn't you?
I regretted that. I should have taken Tylenol by like 8 a.m. that morning. I went hours just being miserable because then I took some at like 4 p.m. and I finally got some sleep. And I was like, oh, you're an idiot.
Well, the fear of taking medicine whenever you have a stomach virus is that
you're going to throw it up.
You throw it up.
Yeah.
And then, oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. And sometimes medicine will like affect your stomach and how you feel anyway. So I'm like, I shouldn't be taking anything right now, but I regretted that.
Sick. So I would say, venture to say, we're probably going to get a little more low energy version of you.
Maybe I can suck it up.
Before the episode, we were kind of going through it and her head was literally laid down on the kitchen
table.
Yeah. Like a ninth grader that just didn't sleep the night before.
That's how I feel. Like, I feel okay. I just feel tired. Like, I feel like I'm so unrested.
It takes it out of you.
Even though I was in bed for over 24 hours.
Doesn't matter when you're sick. It's like,
no.
The rest doesn't even happen.
No. And the energy, like trying to, I didn't have coffee today or yesterday. So Ooh. That plays a part too. And you know that my brain is not focused at all.
Addict.
I feel like one because I'm like, shit, I need my caffeine.
Sorry, a little recovery humor there.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. But I started writing up this episode a week ago. So I started looking over it today and I was like, okay, I was on fire when I started writing it. And then towards the end, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm a little tired.
If you had written this today, it would have been, I don't know if we'd be recording right now.
I don't know. I was kind of hoping you would have been like, hey, let's record tomorrow. But that wasn't going to happen.
No, we got to get this done, man. Got to get it done. Well, I think we're approaching 100 episodes at this point. So
I haven't been paying attention to that. Have you?
Somewhat.
Kind of.
It's more
kinda,
like.
Kind of, sort of.
I don't know. I just love doing the work. So I wouldn't care if it was the 100th episode. Like I'm going to show up and do it anyway. I like doing this.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah, me too. I do too.
I forgot to mention something.
What?
Our giveaway.
Yeah.
The cup.
Yeah.
We have a winner.
Yes.
And I'm not going to use their name.
No.
But I do want to let this person know how much we love and appreciate them.
Uh-huh.
And I see all the comments that this person leaves.
Yep.
And they are thoughtful and they relate from their own experience as well as just common sense. And they're coming from a strong place. And this is someone that, like, I feel like I've watched grow before my very eyes.
Agreed.
This person's a rock star.
Yep.
And I just want to let you know that we love you and...
So proud of you. And just thank you.
Thank you so much.
I know that this has been big for you as well, putting it out there in the community, because what do we say? You help others, it's helping you.
It is.
So I know that you've stepped up and I've seen it and we've witnessed it and you're just a beautiful soul.
And I also want to let you know that there is such a thing as burnout, recovery burnout. So you've been going hard and heavy and it's helping you. It's helping other people. It's helping the community. It's making it a brighter place, a place with more good information. But I want you around for a long time, not just a good time. So if you need to take a day off, we understand.
That's great advice. I love that.
I think that, man, I think anyone can fall into that trap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, this is a thing I'm doing. And then one day you just like sucked out on energy. It's like, I can't do anything today.
Oh, for sure.
So just listen to yourself. That's all.
Yep.
Because I want to see you around here for years.
Yes.
That's
agree.
All. So
awesome.
We love you. Congratulations. Can't wait to get this thing out to you.
Yep.
So.
All right. You ready?
Let's talk anger.
Okay. So we're going to basically talk about the stages of anger and how the anger based on active addiction, early recovery, and later on. And this is as a spouse or the partner. This is not the person who is an addict or an alcoholic.
This isn't an episode on how to deal with anger in recovery.
No. just our recovery, I guess you could say.
Your recovery.
Yeah, yeah. So anger is an important human emotion. We're going to help you understand when anger is meant to protect you and when it is kind of, I don't want to say false anger, but it's anger that can be managed easier.
Okay. I'm interested to get into that because I'm not sure what you mean.
You don't know what that means?
I think I will once we start talking about it.
Dang, babe. I hate you. Okay. All right. So let's talk about active addiction and how your anger is in when you're with somebody who is still actively using. If you're looking at the things that anger you while you're with someone in active addiction, it's typically justified. You know, marriage is supposed to be interdependent. We are meant to have partners who are there for us emotionally. And when it's not happening, the situations will make someone angry.
Examples such as?
Like whenever your partner isn't there for you to like help around the house, somebody who isn't who's sleeping on the couch all the time when you need to go to family functions, somebody who just isn't showing up in your marriage.
When the signs of addiction start to really affect those around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not just the person who's using.
Right.
It's the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get angry.
Yeah, no doubt.
But when you speak with this person, they may tell you, oh, you know, there are so many excuses. So many excuses will come up and say, why are you always on my ass? Let me do what I want to do. I'm an adult. I get to do whatever. I'm not hurting you. You know, and then it makes you question your anger.
Yeah, we usually just deny and project at that point.
Yes. But a certain amount of anger is meant to help us survive. It's telling you that your boundaries are being crossed and something must be done. It's meant to give you the energy to make positive changes in your life. It's meant to tell you to do something different. So the anger directed towards an unequal partner will not change your partner because they can't hear you. So if you listen to our episode called How to Communicate with Someone in Active Addiction, we kind of explain how there's no word, anger, challenge you can give your partner to make them change or hear you.
Can we spend just a moment there?
Yeah.
Because I think that is something that takes quite some time for people to come to terms with.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the most common messages that we get, or when anytime someone enters the community, it's like, hey, what are you trying to, what are you looking for? What are you seeking in joining the community? A lot of times people are looking for a way to speak or words to use that get the magical result that they seek.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible. It's just, it's not there. There are people much smarter than me that have looked into this. No one has figured out the magical words to use, period. There's not a specific line of logic you can use or some kind of psychology trick you can use that is going to get them to see your perspective. It just doesn't exist. I think one of the hardest things to come to terms with is that this person may not hear me, will not hear me, and maybe even refuse to hear me outright, period.
Yeah.
And it's futile. It's like you can sit there and spin your wheels a million different ways. Well, let me try. That didn't work, so let me try something else. That didn't work, so let me try something else. And it sounds an awful lot addiction. It sounds an awful lot like addiction at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than what we do.
Yeah.
It's, well, okay, so I can't drink tequila, so let me just switch to beer. Beer didn't work, so let me just use Adderall or Coke or whatever. Just substituting. That didn't work. At no point do we consider, I can't beat this with the logic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a logic thing. It's no different than when you're trying to talk to someone who's in it. You cannot reason. You cannot logic. Anger is going to be not very useful to use with someone who's in active addiction.
Right.
It's just not.
But it can be used for other things.
Yes. You can repurpose it, y'all.
Repurpose it. Use it to change, to shift.
We got a bug in here.
Yes, there's a bug. I think it likes my plant. So the anger has the power to move us away from danger. Like that's what it's there for. We get angry to where we want people to change. Like, hey, you need to do this. You need to do that. But in reality, we need to switch it and change it and turn it and make changes within ourselves. That's going to help us get away from the danger.
Can I ask a devil's advocate question here? Cause I know that someone will probably ask the question.
Yep.
Is how do you know the difference between when to apply it and when to actually let someone hear your anger?
Ooh, I don't know.
Think about it, like with kids, for instance. I'm thinking about that. Like our kids, they don't listen, you know? Kids don't listen.
Yeah.
They're bad at listening.
Yeah.
So you can tell them you need to clean up the floor or the bathroom floor. Like get your clothes off the bathroom floor.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really kindly a few times. And then you get angry and you respond in a different way with a little bit of aggression,
mm-hmm.
like some tone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious. There's a boundary here now. There's a consequence. And it's effective.
Yeah.
It's effective.
Right. That's... So, you use it to change, like you said, the boundary. Like you have to, if you're getting to a point where you're going to react or you're going to get angry, there has to be an action that follows up with that. Like starting to detach, setting a boundary, and actually doing something different than just yelling at somebody.
An action.
Being angry with them.
Right.
An action.
Yeah. Just the yelling, just the verbalizing of your feelings isn't very helpful.
No, not unless you're verbalizing.
With someone in active addiction.
Right, right. With somebody in active addiction. And that's what I was also going to say is that, like, when we work with others, I don't encourage anyone to hold in their anger, right? Like, we encourage them to direct it towards something else. You can release it to a community. You can release it to, like, us, a therapist, journaling, exercising, and actually making the change, which is the setting the boundaries and then starting to detach and using that anger as fuel to change yourself.
Yeah.
And your situation.
It's the way you have to look at it. You have to frame it that way. I think a lot of us walk around, myself included, at one time in my life, feeling like I didn't like the way anger felt. Mm-hmm. Now, this is in early recovery because at this point in my life, like I'm changing. I'm looking at things differently. I used to be like my nickname growing up as a little kid was Mad Matt.
Yeah.
I had a temper. I'd get mad about everything. If something upset me, I would just get mad at it and throw things and scream and yell and pout. And like, that was kind of my MO. Forgot where I was going with this.
I don't know, but you just described our kid.
Yeah, he's Mad Matt Jr. Oh, yeah. Being able to repurpose, retool it. I came to the understanding eventually that like anger wasn't a flaw, it was a feature. It was really uncomfortable to feel, though. It's an uncomfortable feeling. Like, your blood pressure increases.
Yeah.
You hyper focus on it. Mm-hmm. If you're anything like me, you have conversations with yourself in the car about what you would say to somebody or how you would handle it. And it'll make you feel like you're freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Anger will.
Yeah.
But it's not a flaw. It's a feature. You can repurpose it, repackage it. We talk about reframing things all the time. I don't remember who said it. It didn't come from me, so I can't take credit for this. But if you're going to have it, you might as well use it for something. You might as well apply it in a way that can serve you.
Yes.
As opposed to just doing nothing with it, or worse, swallowing it and then becoming resentful.
Yeah.
Which I know I have a lot of experience mm-hmm. working with addicts. Resentment's a big offender for why people relapse and why they drink in the first place. Mm-hmm. If you swallow anger, that's what happens.
Yeah.
If you don't deal with it. If you just get mad and just don't deal with it, you have to release it in some way.
Right. And like I was going to say, for me, when I didn't release it, it turned into depression, anxiety, panic. And then I would start getting angry over everything, small things, to where I couldn't control it.
Yeah. Like dysregulate your system for dealing with anger. Mm-hmm. You know, where everything feels really, really big. And then when you feel that, you just swallow it more. And it's like, it just increases that same feeling you just described over time.
Yeah.
It gets worse and worse and worse and worse before anytime you're angry, it just, you don't know what to do. And then you just shut down.
Yeah.
Like completely shut down.
Yeah. So you have to release it, but it has to be released in healthy ways.
Yeah. You know, like the Dead Sea is dead because it has inflow, but no outflow. Mm-hmm. So it's like a river feeds it, but the water doesn't go anywhere after that. And so it's dead. Nothing lives in it, right? So like, I think the human body, the human soul, emotions have to have inlets and outlets. There has to be somewhere for all that stuff to go. You can't just stick it into a pool and expect anything to thrive or live in there. You have to have an outflow. I think anger is a good example of something that has to have an outflow. And there are constructive, positive ways to deal with it that don't involve bashing anyone's face in or screaming or throwing things or yelling or trying once again to have a rational conversation with someone. Man, like that's a trap that I've fallen into a million times. And every time I catch myself and I'm like, why am I here again? Where you try to rationalize with someone who's in active addiction. Mm-hmm. And then you find yourself like you're arguing with a wall.
Yes.
It's like, what am I? This is on me now.
At that point.
Why am I trying anymore? Like this is what I get every time. Why did I think it'd be different? But it's mm-hmm. so easy to get caught in that trap where you want to defend yourself. Or rationalize, or like, ooh, I'm feeling extra patient today. I'm going to have a conversation with them. Mm-hmm. It never works.
No.
I've never once had elicited a moment of like clarity from an addict trying to reason with them. Generally, these things come when the shit hits the fan and their life is an utter ruin.
Yeah.
That's when I can speak for myself here. It's when I got ready.
Yeah. And I was going to say that we know people who have left relationships and they have told us that they had to get angry. So angry that them leaving would be justifiable, you know? Like you have to get angry.
Yeah,
Paige, I think that's where anger serves a purpose.
It does. Like Paige and I had the opportunity to talk to someone about their journey. maybe that episode comes out. Maybe it never does. I don't know. But I was honored to hear that because mm-hmm. I've so often felt that myself. And I've wondered that often about spouses too. This person talks about she intentionally, as she put it, stabbed herself with as much anger and pain as possible so that then she could then take action mm-hmm. as opposed to just sitting there hoping it gets better tomorrow.
It was so powerful when she said that. And I've talked to somebody else who has said this exact same thing. Like, I'm like, whoa, like this is a thing. You need to use that anger to push you to safety.
Yeah. It's the catalyst for change in action.
Yeah.
When used properly.
Right.
If you swallow it, you're going to end up resentful, angry, depressed, all the things that mm-hmm. you went through.
It's going to be more difficult.
Yeah.
To handle.
Yeah. And I think that's tough for a lot of the people that we find in these types of relationships. I know you specifically, like being an empath, someone who takes on the emotions of others and feels what other people are feeling and looks really hard at your part in things, too much, I would say, to mm-hmm. some degree, you know, to find yourself like, I don't know if this is the right applicability of this term, but like good girl syndrome, where it's like, I'm just going to be quiet. I'm going to be agreeable. I'm just going to mind my business. I'm not going to rock the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you don't want to get into confrontation with anyone. It's easier to let things go because you're kind of like taught that, you know, you're like raised that way. Some people are anyway. I know that you have dealt with this quite a bit.
It's just our culture as well.
Yeah. So anger is almost like forbidden fruit. It's like taboo.
Right. It's like you're not supposed to be angry. You need to control yourself. You need to control that emotion. Just like men are not supposed to cry. You know, we're not supposed to be angry. We're supposed to be almost submissive in a way. And I think that just goes back with the fact that women haven't had much rights for a long, long time. And now we finally have choices and we can make decisions and we can get angry and it's okay. And we can do something with it.
And there's also a flip side of that. There's also another category of people who are just like wild ass where it's like, oh, you've offended me. I will let you know times a billion.
Yeah.
Like, you are not going to upset me without everyone hearing about it.
Yeah.
That's not healthy either.
No, but we're not talking about those situations. This is actual, like, legitimate anger that it's justifiable. Like, you should be angry about these things. Be angry about the way that your partner is. Now, I wanted to ask you, though, on the flip side of this, because for me, if I were listening to this, I would think, okay, well, if my anger is justified, isn't my partner's anger justified?
You mean when someone's in active addiction?
Yes.
Not every thought that crosses a person who's in addiction's brain is wrong, right?
So yeah.
There are things that, I mean, they're like, we're not completely gone in la la land. I mean, like real things happen that hurt and offend us and everything else. But there's a difference between what I would consider like healthy anger and then anger that you have walked into. Mm-hmm. Like, oftentimes when I'm working with someone, the question that I ask them anytime that they're like, they'll call and vent and I'll say, okay, so what was your part in this? It's a question they hate hearing. Everyone's ever dealt with me knows this and like they hate me for it, but there's a reason for it. What was your part in this? Oftentimes I find that addicted people play the poor me card. I did this all the time. I played the poor me card. This is bad things happening to me. The bird shit on me. Mm-hmm. I teach them that the bird's a shit. And if you look back far enough, you'll find that you invited the bird over to shit on you. A lot of times we create scenarios and situations, as the 12 step, as the book puts it, like we step on the toes of our fellows and then they retaliate and now it's their fault.
Yeah.
Like at some point in the past, we placed ourselves in this position. So addicted people have a lot higher instance of that kind of thing going on, I think, mm-hmm. because we're all over the place. We're wild ass. We're constantly putting ourselves in positions where we're lying to people. We're cheating, we're stealing, we're doing all kinds of things that would leave people to be upset with us. We have more opportunities for people to be mad at us, which means less justifiable anger when they retaliate. So it's not to say that everything that they come up with is wrong.
Well, no, right? I understand that. But I'm talking about just people who are like angry drunks. You know, when people drink too much.
Apologies for the dog yell.
they start saying really mean, ugly, hurtful things, and they're like just super angry about things, and we're like, you can't take them seriously because it's amplified. It's not justified the way that they are reacting.
Yeah, I think that like anyone can have their emotions validated, right? So mm-hmm. you can look at a child who's throwing a fit over the fact that there are no more crackers left in the cracker box that they have in their hand. And empathize with them. Like, I understand why you're upset. No different than with an alcoholic who's throwing a fit over something. But remember, we're dealing with grown-ass people now. right? Yes. So there's less of a room for, in my opinion,
tolerance
for the kinds of things that we decide to get upset about or throw fits about or whatever. So, is it justifiable sometimes, but just not always? I would say much less often is the case. My experience was that very little of my anger that I had with the world was justified.
Yeah.
Very little. Okay. Most of it was a perspective problem that I had from the get-go, or placing myself into situations that had led to people being angry with me and I was mad at them for really no reason.
Okay.
But we deal with a lot of this in recovery. Tons. Like, resentment is the number one offender. So we're talking about anger here. Resentment goes hand in hand with it. I mean, they're different concepts. Mm-hmm. Anger happens in the present moment. You've said something to me. I can be angry in that moment. I can tell you to stop doing that. If you're a healthy person, don't treat me that way.
Right.
I don't appreciate that at all. I don't like the way that you said that, or that's not accurate, or whatever it might be. But if you were to do nothing about it, or if I were to do nothing about it when you've said something and I just swallow it, what happens over time is it turns into resentment.
Resentment, yeah.
And resentment sort of like brews in your soul and it makes you sick. Like they say, it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we've got a major problem, and a lot of addicts deal with resentment. I think spouses too.
Well, yeah, they do. If it keeps happening over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it will continue an active addiction. Like, how are you not going to become resentful towards this person if the behavior doesn't change? That's natural, but that means that you have to change your circumstances.
Yes, which is often the answer no one wants.
Right. All right. Well, I want to switch it a little bit and go into early recovery.
So kind of at a stage in life where things are rocky, but they're better.
Maybe.
Better relatively. Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
Actually more difficult.
Because, yeah. How many times have I said that the first year of recovery was probably one of the most difficult because so many things were happening? But this wasn't just the first year of recovery. This would be in the first few years of recovery, the different things that you can be angry about. And I'm just going to kind of list off a few things. It can come out in all sorts of ways. So you may be angry with the past, angry that your partner hasn't recognized the damage they've done, angry that their behavior hasn't changed much since removing the substance, angry at small issues, you know, like maybe something happened with your car and then it just like, you just explode, you know, very similar to how it would have been in active addiction. Angry they took too long to run an errand, angry you lost so much time, you know,
like in your life,
so much time in your life during active addiction. Angry you tolerated dysfunction for years. Maybe you become angry with your kids, your family, your friends, your work, angry that you had to hold down the fort while your partner got away to rehab and you had to stay home and take care of everything. Angry that your partner is still in selfish mode and angry that you still feel like you can't express yourself. The first year of recovery is hard for everybody. There's going to be lots of unraveling of emotions for both people.
Yeah. It's like after a storm passes and a tornado has just destroyed the neighborhood. It's mm-hmm. like you're grateful that there's no more immediate danger, but mm-hmm. now you have to come out and deal with all the crap laying everywhere, rebuilding everything.
Yeah.
It's harder.
Yes.
Like it's not as scary. But it's harder.
There are some people where there's going to be more anger during this part than when
absolutely.
They were in active
addiction.
Because
you're not even...
things are really going to come to surface.
Yeah.
And you're becoming more, you're in a safer place. And when you're in a safer place within your relationship and within your home, you're going to feel vulnerable and to where you can actually share and express yourself. And the anger is going to come out.
Yeah, it will.
So during this part, the difference here than before is that your partner's actually going to be able to listen to you and
somewhat.
Hear you just a little bit, but you can start practicing. You can approach, your approach can start shifting. Like y'all have to rewire your brains. You have to learn different behaviors and we have to change our reactions too. And that's going to be with talking about I feel statements, apologize when needed. And recognizing that your partner is actually putting effort in, it may not be as quickly as you want it to be, but you can recognize the smaller things that they're doing in recovery.
I would caution against that to some degree.
Okay.
I'd push back just a little bit.
Why?
Because I think that we, for people in recovery anyway, like I don't think that I'm unique. I don't think that I'm special. I don't. I think I am the bare minimum bar for what recovery should look like. Bare minimum bar. I think this is the bare minimum for what we should be after in recovery, which is acknowledgement of harms done, working very hard on future behaviors, calling yourself out on your own bullshit before anyone else has to, making amends when needed, you know, admitting when you're wrong, being open to challenging your own thoughts and ideas.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people substitute recovery for a lot of other things. Like when someone is incredibly abusive or when someone is just a bad partner, like this dude probably just should have been single his whole life. Like he doesn't know how to be in a relationship. Like we throw all that crap into a bucket called sobriety. And just because they're getting sober, they might be going to therapy once every other couple of weeks or something.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't think that's recovery.
Or they might be in an IOP program, but they're really not doing the deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not cutting those people a whole lot of slack. No,
I agree with that too. But also like with you, all of your behaviors took years to unravel.
Yeah.
And you did hardcore recovery. That's why we're very serious about what recovery looks like and how long it takes. I mean, you went to treatment for 30 days. You got out and went to IOP. You went to 90 meetings in 90 days. You kept continuing to go to meetings. You still go to meetings to this day. You speak at treatment centers. You work with people. Like, and it still took years for everything to unravel.
Yeah. So I think the level of patience should be commiserate with the level of effort into recovery.
That right there. I agree with that.
I think that's what I'm sort of trying to get
at. So instead of looking at the behaviors or what they're like showing at home, you want them to gauge it based on how they're working their recovery program?
Yeah, recovery of some kind, right? So a lot of people just remove the substance. Okay, he's sober, our problems are fixed.
Yeah,
like,
but that's
we see that all the freaking time.
Yeah.
You're still going to be angry and you're still not dealing with someone playing with the full deck.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Like the biggest problem that sober people or that people in early recovery have is the ability to challenge their own thoughts and ideas and actions. It's you're a slave to your first thought. That's the difference between someone who's really in recovery and someone who's not. Is that when we're in active addiction, you are a slave to your first thought. I have a thought, I'm angry. It's true. That's all we think. And I'm going to act on that thought. Recovery teaches you to pause for a moment.
Question.
Consider what you're about to do. Is this a healthy way to respond to that? Could I handle it a different way? You start to question yourself. And why wouldn't we? Someone who's not questioning themselves is the biggest red flag of all time.
Agreed.
And I think that is the best way to tell if this person's serious about this or not. Are they questioning themselves? Because listen, my best thinking got me into the biggest effing mess I've ever been in my entire life. My best thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was a pretty smart guy. I got through school with stellar grades. I was on the student investment committee, had success young in business. I was brought into rooms with very important people at a young age. Like I was on the up and up on appearances. I'm smart. And a lot of people, I've never met anyone dumb in recovery. All very intelligent
yes.
people, very smart people, very capable people. But there's a danger with that because the world rewards us for our logic. It doesn't apply in recovery.
Mm-mm.
You're rewarded for questioning the things that you hold true. Someone who's willing to do that that's recovery. I took a call today from a guy who's a little over a year sober. And it's been so amazing watching his journey, watching him grow. In the beginning, when I first met with him, I would challenge him with certain things and he would act like put off and offended. Like, I cannot believe you just said that to me. I cannot believe you just asked me that. Now he's calling me with questions before I even have to ask. It's like, I think I'm off base here with XYZ. What's your take on it? How did you handle this?
That's great. But how does a partner gauge that? How can they recognize that?
When you have a conversation with someone, whenever you've had a disagreement of some kind,
mm-hmm.
what kind of disagreement are we having? Is it like talking to a 4-year-old or is it like talking to a grown adult?
Exactly. You're actually utilizing your communication skills. You're more emotional.
Are you dealing with ego or are you dealing with humility? Now, it's not going to be perfect all the time. It won't.
No.
I don't want to make it seem like there's a switch that flips and suddenly they're this like healthy person.
That's why I'm saying there has to be something for them to gauge on based on early recovery and how it's reflected in their relationship.
Yeah, I think that whenever you address a concern with someone in early recovery and you've approached it in a healthy way, what do you get back? What do you get back? Do you get back full-blown denial, projection, rationalization, excuses?
Red flag.
Red flag.
Mm-hmm.
Red flag. So I think at that point you need to consider. Okay.
Reevaluate.
Are we in recovery or are we not?
Yeah, I agree. Because you were always still kind of open to discussing things. I mean, there were times still where you were just like, this is my way or the highway. This is how I feel. End of story. you know, and that took a long time to unravel that. But in other areas of our life, I could see progress.
It gets softer.
That's what I was trying to,
yeah, okay,
to recognize.
There's a softening in somebody whenever they're really considering their thoughts and actions and motives and everything that goes into being a human.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who has just removed a substance, but they have kept that thinking, believing that the substance is the problem. The substance is a symptom.
Yes.
And that is,
I mean,
it.
We say you take the, you remove the substance and that's only,
I don't know, like
5% of the solution.
Don't get frustrated. I don't think that's the right word. Heartbroken in some ways. Anytime I see someone like in the community post that like their partner hasn't been drinking or doing drugs or whatever it might be. And like, they're really, really proud of them, but then they'll follow it up with, but nothing's different. And it's like, because they're not in recovery. Like, that's not recovery. That's not emotional sobriety.
Right.
They're still a slave to their first thought and action. They're really doing nothing. They've basically just placating you with removing a substance, but not really fixing anything at all. Like, if you're still angry, you have a right to be. Nothing's changed here. In fact, it might be worse because now the anesthetic is gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing is that in early recovery, a lot of people are taught not to discuss their feelings or emotions or anger because they're afraid they're going to trigger their partner.
Yeah, and treatment centers kind of lean into that some degree as well. I come from the old school here where you can say whatever you need to say. You can express your feelings however you need to feel. Like I told you day one that you are allowed to process all of this on your terms and on your time. Mm-hmm. However you need to feel is okay. You can feel however you need to feel. I'm fine with that. If I am offended by something, if it hurts my feelings, if it drives me to a place where I feel like I need to use or I start to feel shame, there are resources out there. I can pick up the phone and call someone who's been there before. That's on me. Right. But you're not shaming anybody by saying this happened.
But I think it's kind of sad that we're told to hold in our emotions even longer.
I don't think that's healthy.
And
I don't think that's right.
It's healthy, and I don't think that's okay either. That's why we say in active addiction, yeah, you can release your emotions, but it's not going to do anything for the solution. But it can help you if you direct it elsewhere and put it somewhere that is more positive. In this way, it's the same. Like, you just have to direct it in healthy ways.
Yeah. How did you direct your anger in those early days? Or I know you say you were distracted. Like,
I
really
didn't
distracted.
Know much of my anger in the early days. You actually made a TikTok recently about how some of the stuff we didn't realize was so bad until years on.
Yeah.
Like, because we were just kind of like in denial, I think, for a long time and just surviving. But whenever I started having like my panic attacks and all that stuff, I had a lot of anger come up then. And this was many years after sobriety. And for me, I went to therapy and I discussed it with my therapist, and she helped me break down my anger. So this was like, it was almost like false anger, I guess you could say, because I was getting angry over really stupid things. I got angry because you would wake up when I was doing a routine with the kids before school, and it would make me angry because it was messing up my whole ordeal. So I had to break it down and say, okay, he's messing up your whole routine. What's going to happen? Oh, my son's going to miss the bus. Okay, your son misses the bus. What's the big deal? What do you have to do now? I have to take my kid to school. Oh, okay. Then you take your kid to school. What happens now? Oh, my whole morning routine is messed up. Okay. And then what? Oh, that's it. Nothing much. Like, I'm not angry. It's not something that I needed to be angry about because it didn't really affect my life. Now, when somebody is, harming me over and over again, then that is affecting my life. That is something to be angry about. You waking up early is not something for me to be angry about. So I just had to reframe my anger.
How do you separate the things that when you examine them and say like, this is justifiable. It's like, I'm feeling this and this is definitely not a complete me issue.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tell the difference? Because there's a lot of people that I see that like, I'm a control freak. So I'm speaking for all control freaks and saying, like, if I really want to, I can get mad about anything.
Yeah. Well, you know how you say that addicts are a slave to their first thought?
Yeah.
I don't think that way. I put a million thoughts in my head to try to figure out which one is most logical. So I don't think of that first thought. If I'm angry, I'm like, okay, hold on. I'm going to pause for a second and I'm going to breathe and I'm going to figure out if this is something that I really should be angry about or if not. And then eventually I get to a point where things that would have angered me before don't anger me any longer. Like I don't get angry over small things.
No, you don't.
I never really have. I don't know if I'm supposed to.
No, I think I think it's a great skill to have. Like,
I don't know if I'm naive.
Like, I've mentioned this before. Like, if you want to see some wild stuff, like, hop on your neighborhood's community Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or hop on, like, right. a PTO page or something like that.
Like, somebody gets angry, their dog is loose. Like, or somebody, if you get angry because somebody's dog pooped in your yard, I don't get angry over stuff like that. We have ducks that walk around our house that poop everywhere. And Matt gets frustrated because there's duck poop everywhere. And I'm just like,
duck poop. It's not... I fear it getting in the pool and staining the pool plaster. That's all.
Okay.
That's I don't fine. Care if there's duck poop and that's okay. on the porch or whatever. But whatever. I
don't,
sweep it up.
I don't get angry over that stuff. Like natural occurrences, things that are like, those are so out of my control. I'm not going to get angry over it because it just disturbs my peace. I'm going to move on. I don't let it affect me.
Okay. So let's walk through like a bit of a decision-making matrix for a second. Let's say like, do you have a way in your mind to say there are big problems and there are small problems? And this is not a big problem.
Yes.
Okay. And what constitutes big versus small?
Big means that it's happening over and over again.
So a pattern.
It's a pattern. Yeah.
So one offs, you're pretty good at tolerating those things.
Yeah.
Natural occurrences, you're pretty good at tolerating those things. Mm-hmm. Like it's hail season here in Texas.
Yes.
It's going to hail.
Yeah.
It's what it does here. Yeah. For next 6 weeks, every night, it's going to be a threat or some kind for the most part. You can get mad about it.
Yeah.
But why?
Right.
Why? And if you do, then the next logical step is, then what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Put your house on the market. Move. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So you have some kind of a guideline in your mind for this is something worth getting upset about. This is something it's not. So when it's somebody with a repeated pattern over time, you will listen to that anger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, you've developed a way to kick it out.
Yes.
How do you do that?
I don't know because I've never been that person.
Does it not upset you in the first place?
No.
It doesn't upset you in the first place?
No.
So let's say that the school changes the start time tomorrow to 45 minutes earlier.
I might be annoyed for a second, but I don't let it out, or I just process it in my head and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get mad over this because it's out of my control. So what's the purpose of getting angry over something that is completely out of my control? A lot of the things that happen with the schools when they say, somebody forgot to email the teachers about what they need to wear for choir on tomorrow, you know, and people will post about it online. And I'm like, why? It's not that big of a deal. I feel like what I do is I go back to basic human needs and being a basic human to where we didn't have the out to like express ourselves online. We didn't have social media. We didn't have people to talk to that if we were angry about something. I just go back to being a basic human and that helps me through it. I'm like, it's not that big of a deal.
Makes sense. I think that's helpful. I just wanted to ask you because I think it's helpful to put that out there. I know that I can speak for myself here that I've struggled at times in my life with there are big problems and there are small problems. And everything at some time felt like a big problem. Everything. Because the bird shit on my windshield, you know? He was after me.
But
that's what it felt like.
The difference with us is that I didn't get mad over small things, but I would get mad over patterns of behavior that I felt were big problems. And you were the opposite, where you don't get mad at big things, but you'd get mad at the really small things.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of why we work out too,
like who took my screwdriver and I just like lose my mind.
Yeah, yeah. it's like okay, come on, man. Let's just chill. And I do get angry. I don't want people to think that I don't get angry because obviously I have my moments.
Sure.
There are times when our children will do something or times that maybe you say something and I'm just like, "Ah," but I don't allow it to consume me.
Okay. That makes sense. So, sorry, I sidetracked this bad here. So back to the discussion. Mm-hmm. Where were we?
All right. So that was just basically how to deal with anger in early recovery. It's very, very tricky. Just communicate, apologize when needed, and then try to acknowledge if your anger is going to serve you or if it's not, or if it's something that you need to do a change.
So what's the difference between anger that can serve you and anger that cannot serve you? Like what is anger that cannot serve you?
Just like the whole hail damage thing. That's the kind of anger that doesn't serve you.
I'm talking about in the context of someone. Let's say there's a person in your life who has a repeated pattern of doing the same thing over and over and over, and all your attempts to get them to see your way have failed.
Okay. Well, let's say that you get angry whenever your partner goes and runs errands because that's a big trigger for you.
Okay.
That initial anger is okay and acceptable, but how you react to it is what's going to be important. You can have a conversation with your partner and say, hey, look, I'm angry about this because this is a big trigger for me. And I just want you to know, can you please let me know that you're doing something besides running an errand that's going to take forever? That's not, that's going to get drugs or getting alcohol, you know, let's have an open conversation about it. I think that's the importance of this time is to have an open conversation about your anger.
It reminds me of something I struggled with in early recovery was anger was like a default emotion for me for a lot of things. Anxiety, fear, especially. Fear turned to anger very quickly for me. I didn't realize that I was in fear. I just thought I was angry. I thought anxiety was like a form of anger in some ways. It sounds crazy, but okay. Fear that, like, there are three types of fear for me. Fear that I'm not going to get something I want, fear that I'm going to lose something I have, or fear of the general unknown. It sort of like all my anger or all my fear can be kind of thrown into one of those three buckets. And I could find myself getting angry when I was actually anxious or scared and just misapplying it or misidentifying it as anger. When in fact, I found I'm just fearful. I'm anxious. I'm worried. I'm sad. I'm a lot of other things. The feelings wheel is really helpful for this.
Yes. When you started saying that, I thought about that.
And all the feelings wheels are a little bit different. I think everyone's got kind of their own spin. But the one that I used, anger was one of the five central emotions. Mm-hmm. I think there were five in the middle, five or six. And anger was one of them. And I could kind of go down and I would say it would go to like anxiety at the top, fearful, whatever. And then I would follow it down and it would go to like fear. It wouldn't go from anxious to anger. You know, anger shows up in other ways.
Yeah.
It wasn't what I thought. So I misapplied a lot of it. I know that I've worked with people in the past too that do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where I can be scared and think that, like, get angry as a response. Like, my brain was just broken in that sense that I didn't know what to do with these things. I didn't know how to categorize these things. So when someone is fearful that someone is out relapsing, they're angry, but they're really not. They're scared. Mm-hmm. They're in fear. It's anxiety driven by fear.
Yeah. But the initial emotion has to be anger.
That's how it comes out. But it's fear. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fear reaction that comes out as anger. It's not really anger. It's fear.
It's fear.
Yeah.
Like, but it makes sense. And if your partner is working in their program and in recovery, they're going to be able to accept this a little bit better than if they weren't. They'll be able to have communication with you.
Man, one of these days I'm going to find a way to like get more people in that place. I don't know how. I don't know if it's just like speaking, exposure, a book, something like that. But like I feel like recovery in general, like there are some really wonderful ways that people recover. And I feel like the addict mind is such that we walk around just thinking we're so unique that won't work for me.
Yeah.
Like I want to find as many relatable stories and people as possible and get them together and put it out there. Cause it's just, we're all so much the same. Mm-hmm. It's not even funny, but like you can suffer from terminal uniqueness where you think, oh, that ain't gonna work for me. Like I talked to a guy and he's been struggling with addiction most of his life. And he saw one of our videos, I think, and was like, oh, that guy gets it. I'm like, dude, there are millions of people like me. Like, I'm not special in this deal. I'm not. But if it's relatable in some way to somebody, suddenly it makes sense. I think as recovered people, like, it is our job to reach our hand out and say, it's possible. We can do this. Like, mm-hmm. It is. And like, this is just a side here. I wish that more people would see that, like, we're not so different. And then it's possible for you. It's possible. If I did this, anyone can do this.
Right.
Like, my little hamster brain figured this out. Anyone can figure this crap out.
Yeah.
Sorry, just a side. I've been saying forever, I'm going to create something to
Well, we're in the process of creating things and eventually it'll be more to where we can go on your side.
I hope so, man. There's so many marriages.
I don't want early recovery to be people walking on eggshells. I feel like it should be more open to communication. And I think that's important for all involved.
Yeah, you've got to be patient in early recovery, which we tell people all the time. Like, I know you don't want to hear this, but you need to be more patient. Mm-hmm. And that part sucks.
Mm-hmm. But there's still more to unravel.
But like walking on eggshells is different than patience, I believe. You know, like you don't have to completely ignore the fact that these things happen mm-hmm. and walk on quote unquote eggshells. You just need to be patient that if they continue to do what they're supposed to be doing and you guys are working on this thing together, you're supporting one another, you're acknowledging, you know, harm's done, also resolute that we will work through this. We will get through this. We will figure this crap out. however we have to, like things get better, but it takes patience.
Yeah.
And years. Think years. Like we always say, think years.
Yeah.
Years. I know that if you want to fix everything today, but it doesn't work that way.
No. All right. So one last piece is I want to talk about how does anger look for us now? Now that you're almost 11 years sober, what does it look like in our relationship?
Anger now?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of anger.
No.
Like there's just not.
No. But if there is, we hold space for each other. Like we allow each other to have that.
Now it's really cool. Like I thought about it. I had a really, really, really bad day last week. Really bad day. For work-related, not TUFO stuff, other work-related stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm involved in litigation and it's a lot, man. It's a lot. Like there's just so much information you have to process and you're sitting there going through all this. It's just, if you've ever been through it, you understand. It's stressful, right? And then on top of that, we've got some travel coming up. I've got all kinds of stuff. I've just, my plate's just more than full and I got overwhelmed one day and you had sent me a message and I just flipped out over nothing. But I wasn't like ugly. I wasn't like using curse words or anything like that. I was just overwhelmed and angry and for no real reason. Just like, I just hit my limit. I just broke.
I think you were holding in a lot of stuff and you just exploded.
Basically. That's kind of what happened. Just everyone's got a limit, you know, even me, like eventually the teapot's going to scream.
Yeah.
And it did. And you just let me talk. You let me vent. And you didn't like try to fix my emotions or figure it out because we trust each other at this point. We know enough about each other in our growth and like what our values are that you know that I'm going to figure it out.
Yep.
You trust I'm going to figure it out. This is what drop the rope's about.
Exactly.
It's not about let me fix this for you. Let me build your side of the bridge for you. You trust that I know how to build that thing and your job's just to walk with me through it. That's it. Mm-hmm. You're not going to tell me how to do it. You're just going to walk with me. And what did I do? I have a way of coping with it and I've done the same thing for 11 years. When I get really squirrely, I'll hit a meeting. That's what I do.
Yep.
So I went to a meeting. I left the meeting. I felt like a new person. I was able to process, think, pray, meditate, do all the things I need to do to get through stuff. And I just got through it. And same for you. Like whenever you have tough days, I used to try to fix it and tell you not to feel this way or tell you how to stop feeling this way.
Or take it personally.
Like try to coach you, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. send you an invoice after. Like, yeah, you know, like that ain't how it works, man. That's not how a relationship works. Mm-mm. You know, that you didn't hire me to help you through this stuff. You just need a friend. I think now we hold space for it. That's the best way to put it, like you said beautifully, is that we just hold space for each other's anger when it does pop up, because it does. And you just hold space. It's like, I understand you're angry, but I trust that you know how to deal with this. You're a grown up. You can figure this out. Without telling anyone that, you just let me feel it and then I get through it. And then automatically the process is like, I apologize for the way I acted. I'm having a really tough time. And I'm sorry, and you didn't deserve to get that side of me. And then it's about compassion, empathy, and coming together and fixing it. And that's what anger looks like now. It's healthy.
Yeah, I didn't feed into it.
Mm-mm.
I was like, I had to give myself some moments to back off a little bit so that I would just take a breather, you know, and make sure that, okay, hold on. This is where it's the first reaction wasn't my reaction, or my first thought wasn't my reaction.
Yeah. You're not a slave to that first thought.
No, this is where I thought through it. And I was like, okay, he's having a rough time. I'm just going to be there for him and short answers and just kind of, you know, let him do his thing. And it worked out just fine.
Yeah. You know, kind of back to the very beginning here, when we're talking about like using anger for a purpose, it's such a valuable skill to have. Like we talk about how so much of recovery is alchemy and it's turning things that are garbage, turning lead into gold. Let's make something of it. If we're going to have the emotion, let's do something with it. So if we're going to have anger, let's let it drive change. If we're going to have sadness, let's process it. And then let's allow it to drive change. Let's use it for something good, mm-hmm. whether it's in your professional life, whether it's in your, you know, your relationships, whether it's something going on in your home, whatever it is, it can be used and repurposed and used for good. It is fuel all the same. It is all fuel. Mm-hmm. It's however you want to use it is up to you.
Yeah.
So the worst thing you could possibly do is just sit there and swallow it.
Yeah.
And not do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions buried alive never die. I'm going to say that forever, I think.
Yeah. You know how I cope with my anger now? I, like, say I'm really overwhelmed and I'm just you know, overwhelm and anger kind of go together sometimes. I will go upstairs and I will turn on some screamo music and I will go hard at a workout.
On the bike or something?
And sometimes weights. I will cry and I will release those emotions and it just happens. It's just like, it's intense. And then when I'm done, I'm able to see things a lot more clearly and then I can solve the problems easier.
Is this anger that you can do something about that's in your control or yes, anger out of your control?
In my control.
What do you do with the anger that's out of your control now?
I don't know. You put me on the spot there. What's anger that's out of my control?
There's some people maybe in your life or some events that have happened that you can't change.
Yeah, I do that. That's out of my control as well. I do it with both. With things that are in my control, it helps me figure out what boundaries I need to put up in order to correct that problem because I can see more clearly. That's just a way to let it out.
Gotcha. That's just a way to get rid of the feeling.
It's a way to let it release. Yes.
Yeah, you're thinking clearer after a workout. No doubt. Time to sort of, it's cathartic. You can process it.
Yes.
You can think clear about your next action, like whatever that might be.
Exactly. Yeah, it could be, okay, I'm not going to deal with this in this moment, or it can be, all right, what's the next step? What am I going to do? Or maybe it's like, okay, I didn't need to be angry over that one specific thing, so this just helped me and I'm good to go. You know, it's just a way to cope with it. Kind of realize how you can handle it if it's something that needs to be dealt with in the moment or later on.
I think it's a bit of a perspective shift, though, for a lot of people to say, I'm going to repurpose my anger mm-hmm. towards something positive, because there are a lot of people who aren't at that stage yet where they're ready to reframe anything, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. where it's my anger is going to be used for one thing and that's to fix him. I'm going to get him to stop drinking. I'm going to use it. And that's what I'm going to get. I'm going to get him to stop. I'm going to figure it out. Mm. But like, we encourage you and I won't ever lose patience with someone who's in that place.
Agreed.
It takes what it takes.
Yeah.
Like no different than an addict. Like I might get frustrated and want to shake you at times, but I know it takes what it takes.
Yep.
And eventually you get to the point where like you're sick and tired and you're like, I'll do anything not to feel this way anymore. At that point, I think it's more realistic to start to reframe this and start to use it for other purposes. Mm-hmm. But for a while, you're going to have to learn the hard way that it gets you nowhere. I think that people need to learn that.
Agreed.
Just like kids experiencing natural consequences, like with our own children, we're really big on that.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have to figure it out on your own. You're going to have to learn that if you eat a whole bag of jelly beans, you're going to throw up every time. So enjoy them jelly beans, little man. I'm not even going to try to stop you anymore. You're going to figure it out, you know? Like, I think that there's some level of that that's true. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not popular in like the new 12-step, kind of like the more modern way of going about it. But when I entered, there were still plenty of old timers around that would tell people if someone was struggling like with drink and not drinking, they would straight tell people, why don't you go try some controlled drinking? I've even told someone this before. Like, okay, you think you can drink like a normal person? Go to the bar and order 3 drinks and stop and see how you feel. Go smoke or go take 2 pills and see how you feel. You think you're okay? Try it. See how that works for you. Like, we encourage people, go figure it out. All right, do it. If you're not ready, then there's no point in us talking. Go try some controlled moderation then. And they can't do it. That's what we do.
Right.
Because the phenomenon of craving takes over. The disease, you know, is what it is. And it feeds the mind of desire, need, want. And they go do what we do. We go have 10 pills. We have 20 beers. We have whatever it might be. Binge drink, whatever. We tell them, you have to go through that until you're convinced there's no point. Yeah. So like you have to convince yourself. So like back to what we heard that person share, which is that I had to stab myself with that pain. I had to remind myself there was a reason for it. I had to get myself into a state of reasonableness with it, repurposing it. And it was, that's painful. That's not a light way to use your pain. Mm-hmm. That wasn't like, oh, I'm going to make it positive and work out and it's going to be a great workout. Like that was no, I'm going to make myself miserable intentionally with all this information I have and all these actions and recounting all this stuff.
Yeah.
To feel this. This is what we do in our relationship evaluation module. Mm-hmm. We will put all your pain on paper. You will see it clearly and there's no going back. Once you've written it down and you can see it, you can't unlearn that crap. That's what it is. Those are facts. That is the truth. And it should be painful. Mm-hmm. It is necessary pain. You should feel that. You have to feel that. Or you'll never get to the point where you can use it for good.
Right.
You won't. So I just wanted to make that clear that I don't want someone who's in a really abusive relationship just to go work out and be like,
I was talking about now, okay. Later on down.
Sorry. But yeah, don't try to cheat the system. Your only way out is through.
I do encourage people, obviously, to if they're, you need to exercise. I mean, it's important. So it is, you need to let it out somehow. But I was talking about me now and how I manage it.
Gotcha. That makes, yeah, perfect sense. Perfect sense. Yeah, there are healthy ways to let it out now. I play music. I do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And like there are times where I never like the term justifiable anger for me anyway, me personally, because I know how my brain works and I can justify damn near everything. Mm-hmm. Like inside of my head is the factory. One half manufactures bullshit and the other half buys it. Mm-hmm. And I'm really good at that game, man. I'm really good at that game. You can throw me any scenario right now and I'll tell you how it's justifiable that I'm angry. Any scenario. That's just how my brain
works. I know, but we're talking about our brains. They're different than your brains.
To some degree, but I think some of the thinking is shockingly similar.
Okay.
Shockingly similar. You don't think so?
I do, somewhat.
Let's think about it for a moment. Let me give you an example.
What are we getting into here?
I'll just give you an example, okay? I think that I can manage my situation. I can manage my addiction.
Okay? Oh, you're talking about because we think we can manage you.
Yes.
Okay, but you're a human. That's completely different than a substance. It's a partnership. It's a marriage. It's somebody that you chose to be with.
Yes, but you're managing something that's outside of your control.
Okay, but people don't realize that.
No.
A substance is different than a human.
Sort of, but when the person is under the influence of the substance or their brain is in active addiction, you're not dealing with a normal person like you see.
Yeah.
Appearances can be deceiving.
Right.
As the Bernstein Bears taught
me. I get that. But a lot of us don't understand that. They don't understand that the substance or that the person has all these issues and they're not ready to be emotionally mature with you to where they can listen to you. Like, they don't know that because they married this person.
Yeah.
They chose this person.
At some point, you'll find yourself at the Mexican restaurant ordering Chinese food, wondering why they don't have Chinese food, though. You're appealing to emotions they don't have. You're asking for something they're not offering.
Yeah.
And that pattern is no different to me than chasing a substance down, thinking we can manage it and change it.
Yeah. But I think that once you open your eyes and realize that you can't change
it. But that should make you angry. Back to it. That ought to make you angry. It's frustrating. It's like, wait a second. The hell, I thought we were married.
Yes.
Like, that's we're in this deal together, I thought.
Yes. You should be angry about that.
Yeah. Just don't swallow it. Do something with it. This is almost like it's like how to create a moment of clarity. And it's almost a way to do that.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Right.
Taking it, repurposing it. Like once you see through it, like once you've taken the red pill, there's no going back.
Yeah.
What else we got?
That's it.
That's it on anger?
Yeah.
Okay. Want to touch on resentment at all? How we long disagreed on the fact that resentment is not just a stray cat.
You and me?
Yeah.
When we had the whole conversations about resentments?
For sure.
Oh, we had a lot of conversations on that. Let's save that for another episode.
You think?
I do.
Okay.
We're already an hour in.
All right. I'd talk for two. I'd talk for three. It's fun.
We don't have time for that.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, then.
And I don't have the energy to have this conversation with you. You've done? Already beat me down.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to be it for this time then.
Yes.
Make sure to check out the workshop that we've got coming up. We would love to see that thing packed and full so we can meet you guys, so we can really, really drive change in your lives, because I think that we can do that. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think that there's power in numbers, and the more people that we have, the better it's going to be. Pain shared is pain lessened. You will leave this thing feeling lighter. I guarantee you. If you don't, I will give you your money back. I stand by that.
Nice.
You will feel better when you leave. You will feel connected. You will feel like you have purpose in all of this. It will not feel so lonely anymore. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
Guarantee it. I will make that guarantee.
All right.
You down? But you're not guaranteeing this?
No, I am.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We're in this deal together. You're staring off in the space, man. You done?
I am.
All right. Let's get you to bed.
Thank you.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Matt.
I'm Paige.
And we'll see you.
Bye.